as your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Hello, everyone. This is Bashma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak Live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our site at thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can listen to the people, to live shows and listen to our past shows on our iPod Ready archive section. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. Now, if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website for details. We have a wonderful guest tonight, someone that I watch and listen to and admire hearing, Carol Kane, host of Michigan Matters on WWJ-TV here in the Michigan area. I'm sorry, I'm having a little bit of a difficulty here. Carol is the editorial director of WWJ-TV and Channel 50 in Detroit, and is also the host of a great show called Michigan Matters. This weekly TV show features politics, business, and more. She's also helping the station with its Eye on the Future focus in the community to help address critical issues important to the region. As part of that initiative, Ms. Kane produced and appeared in WWJ's breakthrough TV series that ran in December called Building Bridges from the Great Lakes to the Great Wall of China. It talked of the growing business, educational, and cultural connections between Michigan and China, including exclusive interviews with three Michigan governors and the CEOs of automakers and other major firms in Michigan and China. She's just an all-round gal that has her finger, I believe, on the pulse of what's happening, and that was exactly why I have asked you to be with us tonight. Hi, Carol. It is good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, and hello to all your listeners out there in Radio Land. It's great to be here, and interesting times we're having here in Michigan and the U.S. right now.
What's going on in Michigan, Carol?
Well, I'll tell you.
I have like about 1,000 questions, but they all boil down to what's going on in Michigan.
You know, because of the fact that this is the state in Michigan that put the world on wheels, we are so tied to what goes on in the automotive industry, for better or for worse. 100 years ago when the Ford and GM got started and we put the industrial age on the map and it was centered here in Michigan, everything was going rah-rah gangbusters for decades and everything was glorious. Well, it started changing 20, 30 years ago, and we're now seeing the offshoots and all the problems of globalization and technology and offshoring and many other things that are having a dramatic impact. And that compounded with what's going on in our economy and the economic woes that have happened in this industry basically since 2001, and you add it all up, and we've got a really transformational, dire situation going on in the state right now as it seeks to find new light, a new way of surviving, minus auto manufacturing. And that's sort of a lot of what I have been writing about and doing my television shows about and people I talk to. That's what everyone's trying to figure out, what the magic bullet is, to try to find a new way to replace those hundreds of thousands of jobs that have been lost.
Well, you know, they have been lost, but the auto industry is still not shut down technically. Do you anticipate that happening?
No, I think what we're seeing here is right now with what's going on in Washington with the loans that the Detroit Three, the Ford, GM, and Chrysler are trying to get and will be getting, and the reorganization plan they have to put forth. Basically, what's happened is this. The industry is changing. There's not as need for as many people because of technology changes as there was, say, 30, 40 years ago. Technology has changed a lot. The fact that it's a global marketplace, huge growth in places like India, China, and Brazil. And basically, when you add the whole thing up, it's just it just is a shifting industry. And certainly, Detroit and Michigan is not alone. Pittsburgh went through the same thing with the steel industry 20, 30 years ago, and they're still working their way through it with small business and medical device making. And here in Michigan, they're trying to figure out what it is. The governor's been talking about alternative energy. And in fact, I have a special that's airing this coming Saturday on WWJ-TV called Prescription for Michigan, looking at healthcare, things like life sciences, medical device making, medical care. Michigan also is home to 15 top-notch universities, a wonderful community college system, and a great research and development system in place here. A lot of engineers involved with autos that could easily transition over to other areas like life sciences or even alternative energy. So there's a whole lot of seeds and things in place right now in our state, and the only thing that's being waiting is to see what direction exactly is it we're going to go.
Well, you know, I know that President Obama was quite disturbed and actually went as far as to call the slow pace that Congress is going in approving this stimulus package as being reckless. The big three auto companies, do you have some insight on how the stimulus package would adversely or progressively affect Michigan at this point?
Well, see, here's a situation. When the auto, and part of what happened here, everyone's looking at the auto industry and pointing their fingers at them. It's not the auto industry's fault per se. The credit markets and the banks made a lot of loans and mortgage loans and things like that, and there were problems with these loans, and they put ridiculous things in place so that anyone could take loans out that they would never in a million years have qualified for, and so many people had to start paying these loans back, and the market fell apart. The credit markets in this country, and in effect the entire world market, frankly, just kind of came to a standstill towards November, December, and that's what they've been dealing with ever since. Now, with what happened with President Bush before in having the big three go forth and things they were asking for, reorganization plans, the president even said, we want you to pay the big three workers as the trans plants, the Honda and Toyota plants are being paid in the U.S., which is really not a fair thing because those are companies with 100 years heritage, decades and decades of workers still, you know, on the benefits package, which the transplants don't have. They haven't been operating in this country this long. So there were a lot of unfair stipulations put forth when President Obama came in there. What's in process right now is looking at what the big three are going to do. We know they're going to have to reorganize every day virtually in the Detroit Free Press, the Detroit News, on WWJ where I work, over writing and doing things on our various television shows, talking about these things. We know there's going to be less jobs going forward. We know this. But the question is, how will the transition take place? Probably between Ford, GM, and Chrysler. Chrysler's probably the most vulnerable as far as longevity. They are talking about the need to have another partner, a global partner to help buttress them, and even Ford and GM, the word bankruptcy would never have come up years ago, but those words have been thrown about, though I don't think anytime soon that might happen, but it's not to say it's not out of the realm of possibilities short-term or even long-term anymore. The whole equation of these auto companies and how they operate has shifted dramatically.
Well, you know, Carol, I agree that the terms are being thrown around. And I also agree that it probably isn't going to happen quickly. Although, at the pace and the momentum that everything has just literally, as you said, since November, just completely come to a standstill and a collapse, is it really out of the realm of possibility that something like that could happen?
Well, is it possible that Ford or Chrysler or GM, they could file for bankruptcy? No. In fact, there's going to be a reorganization as part of this loan. One of the things that's taking place, there's talk of a so-called auto czar. A person who would help with the reorganization of Chrysler and GM as far as the government having a say in how these companies are run. Keep in mind, the U.S. is one of the few countries where private industry runs the private industry. Most countries, their auto industry is subsidized in some manner by the government. We are one of the few places that has not, taken place heretofore. But going forward with these loans being put out and the money, obviously that's going to be changing. So there's this talk of this auto czar, a person who has financial background, who can help in deciding what needs to be taking place, what they need to do to qualify for these loans, how the loans will be distributed, what it's for, because another thing that really is sort of unfair with what's happening to the Detroit 3 is they're being cast to blame for the fact that the cars and trucks are not as fuel efficient, if you will, as they should be, not realizing any time you raise the ante on the amount of the fuel mileage requirements, the cost goes up exponentially, billions on these companies. And it's no longer just Ford, GM, and Chrysler. You've got Toyota having problems and laying off. You've got Honda having some issues. So the North American car market is not going particularly well right now. And ironically, even companies like Delphi, which was a cast-off spinoff of GM way back, filed for bankruptcy, is still operating under bankruptcy, is profitable outside of the North American market. It's just the North American market with the health care costs, with the legacy costs. There's a financial drain on all of these companies. And, again, it's sort of a transformation is the word I keep coming back to in describing the auto industry and what's taking place here. And it's really, it's more about the state of industry in America right now. We're really fighting for our industrial base.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think, first of all, there was a lot of it when Governor Granholm mentioned the autos are the last time I can even think and or imagine or picture someone that kind of took that type of title was Lee Iacocca, when he saved the day in the Chrysler thing. And I know there's been a lot of speculation as to who would be appointed. Do you have any indication of who that would be?
You know, at this point, different names have been thrown about. The idea they want someone, because of the fact, autos is not like running a retail store. It is an extremely complicated business. It's not the kind of business that you just walk in and say, well, now I'm going to start taking over on this. It's very complex. You've got union issues. You've got cost issues. Keep in mind, for the auto companies, it was their financial arms that basically were subsidizing them all this time, as far as that goes, and their offshore sales. But even that has changed as far as it goes, because with what's happened with the credit markets, their financial arms are having huge problems. So there's still a lot of talk right now. Different names have been thrown out there. I know at one point David Bonnier, his name was thrown in the ring, but he said he was not being considered. That he's the Macomb County, the Detroit area union legislator who, it's just unclear exactly who this person will be. I think, though, this bailout is kind of hedging on finding this auto czar and having someone in place and having someone that people knows, understands the business, understands the market and the world markets, because the entire world is being impacted by what's going on as far as this goes. I mean, you have credit markets, stock markets in Beijing, in London, Paris, all over, just being impacted by this, because what we find with this is that all of our markets are intertwined. The Chinese,
absolutely. There's always going to be a trickle-down effect.
Yeah, in fact, the Chinese own so much of the U.S. bond market. If they were just to pull out their money, my goodness, the depression would even begin to talk about what we would have here. So I think everyone's just kind of cautiously looking at what's taking place here. And in fact, I noticed last night when President Obama held his first press conference and talked about the need for the stimulus package, I thought he very deftly answered many of the questions and tried to take on critics who say government needs to stay out of trying to run businesses and getting involved in this. But as the president pointed out, if government does not take a role in this, the consequences would be far more dire by them not doing it than by doing it. So, and again, this is all playing out, so ultimately we'll see how this all shakes out. But just
well,
as far as Michigan, we're still in the middle of it.
I certainly think that President Obama has an understanding that it has gone over over the element of recession, and we are certainly facing areas of depression, and that if something isn't done and if the government doesn't intervene, and the government really is the only one that, you know, this is something that I had a real issue with today, Carol. You know, here it took us, what, a grand total of 2 months and a couple of cartoon caricatures and Colin Powell at the United Nations to take us into a war that has literally cost us over $1 trillion. And yet, look at the fight that our economists, that our governments, that our the Democratic Party are having in trying to get a stimulus package passed for the United States. I think it's incredulous. I really don't understand the mentality behind it. And at the same time, these very people that want us in Iraq, want us in all of these war areas, war-torn areas, also want the government to stay out of their businesses. So I don't know. I call that kind of hypocritical, if you ask me.
Well, it really sort of is when you stop and look at it. But I think what's taking place here, again, it's sort of, I think our whole formula for how the U.S. has been operated and run is shifting. I think what's taking place here is government, unlike, again, most countries where many of the industries are subsidized by the government, that's not the case here. They're getting involved. They're going to need to be more involved. And if they don't, I shudder to think what will happen to the markets here, to places like Detroit and Michigan, and frankly around the world, places like India and China and Paris, Brazil. They're not happy to have things going on here because it impacts them so much. So I think the president's trying to keep calm and try to get this thing, the stimulus package, all signed off, everybody happy with it, moving on. But again, even with, you know, again, one of the names that I had heard, well, you asked me earlier about the Karzai position, is the private equity, Stephen Ratner from Quadrangle Group. His name was mentioned as being possibly someone who's in it. He's got a relationship with Chrysler's owner Cerberus. And again, there may be other names that come forth as far as this goes, but heaven forbid, whoever that person is, there's going to be so much pressure on this person. And this is not something you want to give to someone who doesn't know this industry inside and out, that doesn't know the credit markets and the global impact inside and out, because it's a very, very careful line this person will have to walk in getting these things approved. Because even I had a chance to talk to Mark Fields. He's the president of Ford Motor Company down at the Detroit Auto Show last month at during the media days. And Ford was not one of the companies that was there asking for monies necessarily now. But he told me even then, listen, if the markets continue as they are, we may not be in line to try to get a loan right now. But that's not to say at some point this year we won't be. So, again, I just think it's a very tenuous situation that everybody's facing. I think everyone's kind of collectively holding their breath to see what will happen here. And here's the thing that's really tough. Anytime a new president takes over, there's a honeymoon period, if you will, where you have the person will have so much time till they have to start expending the political capital to get things done. Well, that ended about 3 or 4 days in because of all the crisis that President Obama is facing with this credit market, with the auto markets. And so he's already seeing the politics at play with the Rush Limbaughs of the world out there talking about things and trying to, you know, cast the reasons why this thing should not be approved. And it's just really a tough situation. But even some of the strongest challengers to the president, I think, ultimately want him to succeed, not because him personally, but we need the country to succeed and get back on track. The whole country is having a recession and issues going on. It's more exacerbated in places like Michigan. But it's even around the country. I've been down in other places, out west, down in Florida, and everywhere I've been, I mean, this economy is shuddering right now. This is not just a Michigan or Midwest issue right now.
Absolutely. You know, Jennifer Granholm's speech this week impressed upon us some very aggressive tax incentives that she's giving, like, say, to the Michigan Battery Plant project. In light of, and I know that she had a lot of criticism when Pfizer was shut down due to what a lot of people considered a big botch up on her part for not offering them the same incentive packages that she's currently offering, and we ended up losing a really great business here. When we talk about this, the other thing that she was talking about was this trend to get into this green manufacturing type mode and mentality here. Not only is she projecting that we can become green and manufacturing, but we will also be the consumers of the manufacturing. Is that enough to sustain our economy, though?
Well, and I've talked to the governor at length with this. In fact, you mentioned my television specials at WWJ, which is the CBS Detroit station. I have been working on these specials, looking at these exact issues of what transitions and where are we transforming into and where are these opportunities. I did my first one called Building Bridges from the Great Lakes to the Great Wall, which looked at business, economic, and cultural connections between Michigan and China. My second one ran last spring, and it was called Powering Michigan's Future. And it dealt with this whole issue of alternative energy, and I talked to the governor at length. In fact, as part of the special, I traveled with her to Pigeon, Michigan, which, if you know Michigan, shaped like a thumb. It's over in the little the thumb area of the state, and they've got 30-some windmills there that they're using as kind of a test case to see how it does. And again, I don't think that that's the silver bullet, if you will, the magic bullet to solve all these issues, but it's one of the diversity prongs that I think she's looking at. And I think this whole area of alternative energy is something that she's looking at. Michigan has the technology base, the research and development, the manufacturing prowess. It's been involved in automotive. It can shift to something else. What's the something else? And certainly the battery, the alternative energy, and even medical device making, which, again, is the theme of my upcoming special, which, again, people can go to WWJTV.com, look over on videos where it says, I am the future, and it's called Prescription for Michigan or RX for Michigan. It's posted there, and it airs this Saturday at 12 o'clock, looking at that exact same thing because, ironically, healthcare is the largest job creator in the state of Michigan right now, which a lot of people are often surprised to hear because it just recently shifted because there's so much medical here. There's so much educational system here, the colleges, nursing colleges, tons of national and internationally renowned hospitals like University of Michigan and Michigan State and Detroit Medical Center, which offer world-class medical services, and there's now a thought to try to market that around the country to places so that maybe, for example, Brooks Patterson on Oakland County is marketing his Oakland County Medical Main Street, which has a number of hospital systems there trying to reach out. Bob Ficano out in Wayne County, the Wayne County executive, is looking and doing the same thing for Wayne County, and he's also looking, ironically enough, at the Metropolitan Airport, which is a hub to the world. It's a Northwest hub, flights direct from China and other places to bring patients from other countries into Detroit and his Wayne County to seek medical services. And it's not that much out of the realm of possibility because people do travel when they need medical attention. They'll go where they need to.
Well, I know Robert Ficano has started the new four-star health plan here in the Wayne County area, and that seems to be taking off rather well. From my understanding, it's a pretty good program for health care in this area.
Mr. Ficano, who's part of my Prescription for Michigan special, he was in it with Edith Tillens, who's the director of Wayne County Health and Human Services, talking about that program because it's the same sort of thing. They know, and in addition to the economic development component, this issue of dealing with health care costs is something that's got a stranglehold on this entire country. Because we don't have nationalized health, people have to pay more. And when you have places like Michigan where the unemployment rate is high, it's 11% and upwards and getting higher, more people underinsured without insurance, they still, when they need emergency help, go to the hospital and someone has to pay for it. Nothing is free. So, and I know that Mr. Ficano and Ms. Killens have been working with this program in Wayne County, which really is, it's a benchmark of how things can be done to help effectively lower costs, make things more cost affordable for employees and employers, and it just, again, everyone's got to put their collective heads together to try to come up with solutions on how to deal with these issues, because they are very complex, and if nobody deals with them, it's just going to crumble the whole system.
Well, I think part of the problem is that obviously there's been a loss of faith in our governing agents in this country, not just in Michigan, but across the board. And the resurgence of a government that is really concerned about the welfare of the people, I think, will certainly go a long way. When we talk about, you know, these kinds of crises, first of all, healthcare is not only a business, but it has also been one of the greatest detriments to our economy. You know, we have people that are being crushed by medical expenses, and at the same time we talk about, look at Beaumont Hospital. From my understanding, it's struggling. Beaumont Hospital is a local Michigan hospital, one of the largest in the area, and it is, from my understanding, it's struggling right now. That's pretty scary when, you know, on one hand we are developing resources in the areas of health and health management, and then on the second hand you look at the hospital situations and they're struggling, so it is scary.
Well, you know, part of what happened there is almost the same thing of what happened with the auto industry. What happened for the case of Beaumont, I had an opportunity to sit down with Ken Matzik, the CEO of Beaumont, and have this conversation about what happened there, because, boy, 6 or 8 months ago, they were going gangbusters with proton beam announcements and developments of this and that. And they threw the blankets on. Well, part of what happened is the credit markets dried up. The money they needed to subsidize these projects suddenly was gone. So they kind of just pulled back. Now, they haven't stopped it, but basically what they're going to do is kind of hold off. They're going to go back to the market at the right time, just not at this moment.
Well, that's the problem, and I often, and you know, as you look around, I come from a, up until 2 weeks ago, from a health background and working within the system. And I understand the complexities that are going on there and what's going on the financial aspect of that. The nursing programs are just overwrought with young students that are trying to get in order to satisfy the needs of the community. And at the same time, you know, here we're trying to develop new projects that will help. And sometimes I wonder if we're being overburdened by all of it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I talked, like, for example, out of the various nursing programs, Henry Ford Community College, which is one of the programs that I visited as part of my Prescription for Michigan special, ironically, they have jokingly said, please, whatever you do, don't put us in the special, to which I said, well, why not? Both colleges, universities would love the media attention, but they're so overwhelmed. They had, what was the number, 5,000 people apply for 350 nursing openings for the school year. 5,000 for 350.
My daughter-in-law just got accepted into the nursing program.
Yeah, for the nursing program there. And it's and then they're so overworked or so overburdened, they start looking at, okay, what other areas can we add? So they just added a new biotech, which is another hot area in Michigan, biotechnology. They just added a new program in January. Again, they're just, these colleges are just being inundated with nursing. And there's also a physician shortage that's going to get worse as well, because something like one-third of physicians who are currently operating, or I don't mean operating physically, but I mean are performing as doctors, plan to either retire or leave the profession or move somewhere outside of Michigan in the next, say, 10 years. So there's going to be an even worse situation. Now, compound that with the fact that we have aging baby boomers here. Our population is aging. As people get older, they just need more health care, and you're going to have fewer people unless they're stepping up the educational system, which is why there's a bunch of medical schools now trying to be open. Beaumont, in fact, has one with Oakland University that will open 2010, I believe, and Michigan State has one going up at Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they're looking at an osteopathic hospital out in Macomb, and Central Michigan is looking to put one somewhere in the mid part of Michigan to do more rural-type medicine as opposed to in the city. And so it's really a yin and yang. It's either a severe opportunity or a severe problem, depending on what point of view you're looking at it from. But again, both are underway here with the cost element, with the need element, but with the opportunity as far as these are the entities and areas where jobs can be created.
You know, there's so many things that I'd like to talk to you about, but one of the things that I'd like to bring up right now is Attorney General Mike Cox had made a statement, and I'm gonna read his statement. It is time Michigan had a website that let taxpayers see what their hard-earned money is being spent. I'm calling on Governor Granholm to commit to making Michigan's government more transparent. Citizens have a right to know how their government is spending their money. Now, hear, hear. I absolutely believe. Now, what do you think about that kind of a statement coming
from Mr.
General?
You know, here's what I think. When I look at government, this is a thing that I find amazing. I remember about 2 or 3 years ago, I was invited to speak at an event in a suburban on the east side in the Grosse Pointe, which is more of a wealthy, affluent sort of side of town, five different cities. And the whole point of this was to talk about regional cooperation in the Five Points, getting rid of some city services to try to save costs and stuff. Hardly anybody of the leaders showed up because nobody wanted to go there. It's the same thing with state government, with many local governments. There's so much duplication of services that I think the logical thing is business is shrinking, our health care costs are going up, people are being asked to do more with less. Why isn't government? And so I think a lot of people would welcome knowing specifically what their money's going towards. We hear about education in the state of Michigan, and a lot of times people say, well, the money that's being increases that are going to do nothing but help subsidize some of the benefits and other programs not making its way into the classroom. So I just think there's more of a need to be more transparent with where the dollars are, and my prediction is, as everyone starts watching how we're spending money, I mean, some people think we're heading towards a depression. People are going to be watching where these dollars and cents go, and I think people would welcome having a more transparent government, having more transparent local governments. You can see where the monies go, school systems. I think people would be surprised if they saw what kinds of things and expenditures were taking place.
I'm still upset about the original lotto scheme where they were taking all of the lottery money to give to our educational system, and every year they cut more and more programs out of that. So I'm still mad at that. So that's a whole different topic.
we can talk about that for about the next 2 hours.
I'm
here.
I'm telling you, you have
angry.
No idea. I get so incensed with that one. But we do have a question from a listener. Mike in California asks, what does Carol feel that China can teach the USA?
I have been to China several times. I'm also a columnist at Detroit Free Press, and I have been there writing articles and columns and for the last several years, and I did a special building bridges. One of the things, I had heard so much about China that when I originally wanted to see what the buzz was. I knew why the GMs and Ford and Amways wanted to be there because they're big, huge conglomerates, but I was a little curious why these small companies felt the need to be there. And once I got there, it's not just the size and scope of the size of country. Keep in mind there's 1.3 billion people, but one of the things that is amazing to me is the dedication to pursuit of whatever the goal is. They are single-minded as far as whatever the goal is. The government gets behind and says, we will build a subway system in 3 months, and they build a subway system in 3 months. I saw things there, you know, they joke that the building crane is the national bird in China because there was so much building going on there. The middle class there, coming out of transformation and revolution of their economy there, and you have a growing middle class in China, in India, places like that, compared to the U.S., where the middle class is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. I look at it, and again, their dedication, their willingness to do whatever it takes to accomplish the goal, and they have a government there that decides the course at one level, makes it easier to get things done versus here in our country where we have freedom, which those of us who are here love that. But if you're trying to set a course of action, it's easier to just say this is a direction we're going. No one questions it in any large-scale way, and you have things going on. So again, the tenacity of the people, they're very gentle people. And the other thing that I found most amazing, they love America. They love things that are American.
Really? Isn't that interesting? Oh. I have to tell you, I've never heard that.
I'm telling you, I have
been under the assumption that they are not necessarily fans of the United States.
You know, it's not even you. It's almost an admiration. For example, when I was there, the person who raised, I mean, you would think like a Bill Gates would walk you there would be a king. No, the person, the name that, everywhere I traveled there, when they heard the name Henry Ford, the first Henry Ford, it was like the entrepreneurs there that I talked to, people, when I said, you know, who do you emulate? Henry Ford's name came up over and over and over again. In fact, I had a conversation with some of the Ford executives while I was there. When I came back, I said, you ought to be doing an ad campaign there talking up Henry Ford there, because his name is like, people talk like him, like he was almost God or something, because he is the perfection to them of what you take someone who has an idea. He's an entrepreneur, a tinker. He built this company. He put the world on wheels. He had, you know, the $5 a day pay scale, industrial revolution. I mean, he really was one of the leaders of the auto industry in the U.S., and people look at that in awe and admiration. So while there may be jealousy at some level, I think there's a tremendous amount of admiration for what Henry Ford and people like him have done. So they look at Detroit. Everybody knows Detroit. That was the other thing I found interesting. They know Detroit.
That I know. As a Middle Eastern person, throughout my life, Detroit has just been the core of everything. No matter where you go in the world, they know about Detroit.
And
they do.
And you know, they know it. They know it for cars, and they know it for Motown.
Yes. 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 Absolutely. And it's, you know, and I think that's global. It's really quite unusual. You know, let's face it, though, Carol, there is a love-hate relationship on the part of the United States. I think, I don't know if it's so much a love-hate relationship or a love-fear relationship. Because of the large, the trends that large manufacturing plants are going more and more into foreign hands and into less expensive employment, do you feel that that is going to come back and haunt us at one point?
I think there's a tremendous concern on the part of a lot of people. I think this goes back 20, 30 years ago when the Japanese car companies came in here. There was a lot of anti-Japanese sentiment at the time, and I think there's concern. Whenever your economy is under siege, the person who is the most vulnerable, those people who come in from outside. So I do think there is some element of concern, particularly about the Chinese. In fact, at the auto show, there were five Chinese auto companies who debuted various vehicles and products down at the auto show. And 3 years ago, it was a company called Geely that made its debut there, the first one. And they're not in this market yet because our EPA environmental controls are so strict they can't meet them as yet. But they will eventually. They will be here. There's over 100 Chinese car companies. But I do know with places like China and India, that's a concern. They look at the flashbacks to what happened with the Japanese car companies back in the 80s and all the whatever. But here's the difference. With the Japanese, for example, we have transplants here. So now you have Americans working for the Honda plant in Marysville or the Toyota plant down in Georgetown, Kentucky. And so it's sort of, you're shooting yourself in the foot if you have too much of a backlash. But I do think there is much more in the last 3 or 4 months by American sentiment here to the whole thing, whether it's buying your local groceries or buying things in your neighborhood. I just think there's a more pro buy your neighborhood, buy American type thing to it. And I see that only growing, frankly, as our economy continues to get worse and the recession worse. People just get more protective. It's just a natural human tendency.
I have to agree with you. Now, here's a loaded question for you, Carol. Especially coming from Michigan, because obviously we know that many of the auto companies and the industries in this area were the backbone, were the unions. Do you think the unions help the economy at this point, or do you think they're hindering the economy at this point?
I think that's a load. That's what I call a loaded question.
Coming from Michigan, you know that's a big factor.
It's huge. You know what? Here's what I would tell you. When you go back and you look at the history of autos, or unions, let's start with autos because that's where the UAW and the others, the Teamsters, start. there's zero doubt that companies were taking advantage of workers when they were starting and making them work god-awful hours, not paid as much, in, you know, cruel conditions. Mm-hmm. So there was a reason for them at some point in time. And I'm not saying there's not a reason now. But what happens is the unions need to adapt to what's taking place in terms of needs and market. You can't go in and say, no, we're not going to adjust our pay scale when other people are taking pay cuts, people losing their jobs. It's not realistic to say you're not going to take a reduction in your health care or what you pay for benefits and what have you. But here's what I would tell you. I know this from Bob Sacano. I know this from people inside state government. They will tell you that people in countries like Japan and China hear about the autos and they get scared to death about coming to this country because of that. They don't want to deal with the unions,
mm-hmm.
and that the only way to combat it is to have the union people go meet with them to explain what they would do. Being someone who's from Detroit, grew up here, watching what has happened here, particularly with their auto industry, one of the things is that had to happen is autos had to become a little more competitive, and same thing with the unions. The unions, for example, have a tiered pay scale, which would be unheard of 20 years ago. But with Arvin Meritor, some of the other companies, that through the years, you see the UAW being more flexible on that. And it's going to be the name of the game here, because if the unions want to survive, they will have to become more flexible in these areas in how they deal with companies. Because ultimately, what's going to happen is there's going to be more global companies coming in here. People talk in Chrysler, eventually, whatever happens with the Fiat situation, going forward, I mean, this is going to naturally probably be mergers of other companies, and there's going to be more international firms in here. The unions want to survive. They will have to figure out how to play ball with that game, if you know what I'm saying. And I do think they have shown an ability to be a little more flexible, but there's still a lot of people who feel strongly. I know, for example, when I did my Building Bridges from the Great White to the Great Wall special, I got a lot of people who were really upset saying, oh, this is terrible. You're putting China in a good light. Well, it wasn't that I was putting China in a good light. It was just showing what is. And what is that GM and Rick Wagner, who I interviewed, told me point blank, it's the most important market to them 15, 20 years from now. They've got to get it right there because that market is growing. GM survival depends on its global sales, and there's a huge growing market in Brazil and India and Russia and China. So, again, it may not be what people like to do, but the realities are it's the way of business today.
It truly is. You know, Al Brooks-Patterson, executive commissioner here, wondered why on one of your more recent shows, I think the statement was that why is Detroit being followed by bad publicity? When I heard that, I thought the suggestion to me that it made was that somehow our heartache was coming from outside of our country. But here, look at the case of former mayor of Detroit, call me
Bonnie
Kilpatrick. That was internal, and that really dug at the heart of Detroit. Do you think that Patterson's statement was sort of a victimization of circumstances that, in fact, had nothing to do with outside of Detroit but internally?
I think what we have here in Detroit, and you hear this from a lot of people, particularly people who are from here, that we have a love-hate relationship with ourselves. We're harder on ourselves and talk more down about ourselves than other places even. We focus on the problem. I mean, I hear this all the time. I get this in the media where I go to business groups and they'll say, oh, you media people, all you focus on is the negative and you focus on autos being down, down, down. Why don't you talk about the good stuff? Well, when we talk about the good stuff, people don't remember that. They remember what you said that was bad. I've actually done studies. As I mentioned, I'm a columnist at the Free Press. I've worked at the Detroit News, other papers, and I've actually done analysis at various places I've worked of how much news is on the front page and inside is, quote-unquote, good news versus bad news. The percentage isn't nearly as high as people think. It's just bad news resonates. So I think the point is that people in Michigan are often we're hardest on ourselves. Do you remember there was, 20, 30 years ago, there were campaigns going on and say good things about Detroit and, you know, the I Love New Yorks and people trying to get themselves to talk better about themselves because with all the economic woes going on, you know, 30, 40 years ago, that was a mission and something that people needed to do. So they did it and it resonated. And it seems like when times are tough, it's easy to fall into the trap of just focusing on the negative. I don't know about you, but when I'm out there in the community and talking to people and doing shows, there's a lot of doom and gloom out there right now.
Well, people are, you know, I think the biggest concern is that nobody's really sure what's going to happen. Everybody's just waiting for that other shoe to drop. Everybody's waiting to go into their jobs at work that day and get pink slipped. Or my own son was laid off 2 weeks before Christmas. He was in an auto related industry. So I know that this can happen, and it's, and you know, fortunately, as a family, we'd already been going into another area, but that isn't the case for a lot of people. So you're right. There is a lot of doom and gloom out there. And I think it's genuine. I really, you know, I can't say that, and you're right, Michiganians are the toughest on ourselves. We are very demanding people. We want to know, and we want to know why, and we want to know when, and we want to know right now. So, I think that's what grabbed my attention when Mike Cox made that statement about, you know, a website for us to see how they're spending their money. But I thought, yes!
Well, you know what's interesting? What's interesting, I had Al Taubman on the show last week. He is the retail mall developer, has 22 malls around the country, owns mm-hmm. Sotheby's, and, you know, very, very well-known.
I know, Mr. Taubman, yes.
Well, Al was talking to him about how tough it is out there. He looked at, now he just turned 85 years old, so he's obviously older than all of us. But he said, with what's taking place right now, this is nothing. He said, little girl, you don't remember back when the Depression was going on, when unemployment was 25-30%, and, you know, people were living on potato soup and stuff. This is nothing like that. So it may seem bad, but he was convinced. He said it's going to come back. That this, not that it's the 3-year blip, which Michigan has been on, in 3 years you're up, 3 years you're down, you go back up, and we're always kind of counter to whatever the rest of the country is doing. This is not usual to have the country down with us at the same time. This is, I've not experienced this. But he's convinced it's going to come back, and some people think even later this year we're going to start slowly seeing a rebound once the stimulus package gets done. The monies aren't going to come back to places like Michigan as quickly as I think people would like. But it will come back. It'll slowly balance out.
Well, I know for a fact that Alfred Taubman is really involved in a lot of good things in the area. One of them is the new Motown Motion Picture Studios. From my understanding, he's backing that out in the Pontiac area, which is huge. It's a $54 million studio. And I think he's the one that's backing this. Now, my experience with Alfred Taubman was way back when I was in optics. I don't know if you recall when Pearl Vision Center was in the area. As an executive with Pearl, we used to try to get into the malls, and Taubman and Dr. Pearl had originally had a falling out, and he wouldn't let us in the malls no matter what we did. We had to try to buy out DOC at the time.
Oh my goodness.
So,
oh my goodness.
Oh, it was true. It was a huge thing in the optical industry. And he just absolutely refused, no matter what we did, no matter how many times people from Pearl or myself or anybody else went to see him, he just absolutely refused. Anytime he came to Dr. Pearl, he said, you have to buy out. And you had to buy out the entire other optical chain. You couldn't just buy one store. You had to buy the whole chain, or he wouldn't even talk to you. So he's an interesting character for sure.
You know what else that Al Taubman is into? He personally bankrolled. Do you remember the stem cell proposal initiative on the ballot before Michigan voters in November?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He coughed up $7 million of his own money to put it forth, and Michigan voters voted for it. So
Wow. They're
doing stem cell research now at U of M, and he's convinced, speaking of the medical developments, that that's going to result in 8,000 jobs with high-paying scientists, research jobs that will open up there. And even places like where the Pfizer plant, the facility shut down, University of Michigan mm-hmm. purchased that for $110 million. I think the Regents just a week or two ago approved that. And they're expecting that to create thousands of again, good-paying research jobs. So it's not as if there aren't bright spots out there. There are. I mean, and, again, this film industry thing mm-hmm. with its production companies. I know Bob Picano at Wayne County and the Allen Park, there's another production company there. There's one downtown.
There are three in total, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there's. But again, this gets into these film incentives that the governor announced last year have been crazy successful, and there's some people who are a little concerned that they're too successful and want to put a cap and ceiling on some of it, which, of course, would probably slow down those deals.
How can it be too successful? I mean, in what way?
Well, because they're offering incentives. It's sort of you come in here and you get, you know, the 42% back, and so monies are coming from somewhere. And if they come and they build something, that's one thing. But if they come here, do a movie, bring in people, whatever, then it's not creating as much economic development spinoff. So I think they're trying to figure out what's the right balance. If they keep it as written, these other companies are interested in coming in here. But if they roll it back, or let's say, heaven forbid, another state comes up with a 44% incentive, I don't know what happens to Michigan in terms of all this. So I think, again, I don't see films being the ultimate solution. It could be one of the solutions to help create jobs, just as medical and economic development and alternative energy. These are all specific areas. But remember, the automotive industry, my God, has been around for 100 years. It didn't start off being the number one industry. It grew into it. So who's to say when we look up, maybe windmills or battery, you know, plant production or solar panels, maybe there's something else here that we look up 100 years from now will be the big success. But right now, lots of things are being pursued.
Well, I'll tell you, one thing that I have to tell you, I hope and I pray that the auto industry in this region does not fail. Because to be quite honest with you, as a lover of Michigan, I absolutely love Michigan. I love Michigan. I have always loved Michigan. I can't think of a place that I'd rather live than Michigan. And for me, the image of the auto industries is so entrenched in Michigan life.
Yeah.
I can't imagine life without it.
Well, you know, I don't think that the autos are going to go away. I think what we're going to see is a transition. I think the research and development, or a big chunk of it, will still stay here. Now, for example, GM announced it was building a research and development center in China, which a lot of people were stunned by like a year and a half ago, because they said, well, the Chinese are good at imitating and duplicating. They're not good at creating. Well, putting an R&D center to create cars for that market kind of changes the equation on that. So you're going to see places like China and India take on more of that R&D role. But I still think, again, you've got thousands and thousands of brain trust of research and development and engineers here dedicated to this. And they just gather here. That's why Toyota has a facility in Ann Arbor, their research and development center there. Nissan and others who have it, keep it in here because there's a reason for it. But the universities here, the University of Michigan, Wayne State, Michigan State, got these educational systems which are geared to this. And that's what I think when I hear the governor talking, when I hear Bob Sicano talking, Brooks Patterson's and Mayor Cockle and everybody else talking about it, that's our strength. And everybody knows that. So how to translate that and get that message out to other places and other industries is sort of the challenge now, to try to have other people think, listen, you need R&D, come to Michigan. Maybe it's not automotive. Maybe you want medical device. Maybe you want windmill. Maybe you want propellers for something. But they're looking at the manufacturing prowess that is here. We're geared up that way. We've got all these plants. So I think when the markets worldwide start picking up again, and you see places like India and China where and Russia, which, again, is another hard-hit country, where they have been looking at great investments, but they've kind of pulled back for the time being as well. I think as the markets pick up, we'll start seeing more people coming around and doing, you know, kicking the tires at plants in Michigan, Indiana, and other places, looking for opportunities to take them.
Well, I tell you, you know, Michigan certainly needs a critical eye like yours to witness and to make sense of some of the sad and emotionally charged times that are happening and that are coming. Even, you know, the governor said during her speech that, in fact, it was going to get worse before it got better. And so, Carol, first of all, I would like to thank you for the work that you do in the area, because I think it's important for people to be able to understand sometimes, you know, sometimes so much of it. And it really, I have to tell you, the financial aspects of what has happened in our country and in Michigan have been so big, so large, so looming, and so much that, you know, without people like you, I don't think everybody can quite put their finger on understanding how it happened, why it happened, and I think it's important. So I just want to thank you for doing Michigan Matters. I want you to do it. I want to thank you for the projects that you do and for speaking at functions like the Arab American Women's Business Organizations that's new in the area.
You're just a great gal. We're really proud of you here in Michigan, and I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, Carol.
And thank you so much for having me, and I enjoy talking with you. And again, you know, the old thing about keep hope alive, I'm telling you, there's going to be an end to all this economic turmoil we're going through. I don't know how long it'll take, but I'm confident of that. And this is a state that put the world on wheels, and we're a state of tinkerers, and there's a reason why the auto industry settled here 100 years ago. I believe that same creativity and educational mindset will play forth and help us get to the new future.
I agree, Carol. Thank you very much. And that's it for tonight, folks. That's The People Speak, 8 to 9 o'clock every Tuesday night. We'll see you next week. Thank you, Carol Kane of Michigan Matters, for being with us tonight. And have a great night, guys. We'll see you next week.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the seawall, by the relief of death, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.